Hey, welcome to another Coaching You podcast with the coach, Brendan Sir. I think you're really going to love today. Corey Close, the head coach of UCLA women's basketball, has been absolutely spectacular her 6 years now at UCLA, and she is just crushing it out on the West Coast and really is brought UCLA back to having a phenomenal program. And the Pac-12 is a dynamic league. And, you know, really had a conversation that you're going to love, that I don't care if you coach men, women's basketball, if you coach junior high, high school, college, or pro. She has some nuggets for you about coaching that I think are fabulous. You're really going to enjoy it. After this short break, come and listen to Corey Close. Hey, let's take a second to tell you about one of our partners, Dr. Dish. Dr. Dish basketball shooting machines are the most high-tech and durable basketball shooting machines on the market today. Each shooting machine was designed specifically for high repetition training to allow players to improve through technology. Dr. Dish offers game-like training to give hundreds of shooting reps in just minutes and to provide powerful analytics to help players improve their game. Dr. Dish has also introduced Skill Builder, which is the first of its kind of basketball shooting industry that enables coaches and players to stay connected, design and upload training exercises that combine shooting, conditioning, and ball handling into one complete workout, and instantly receive feedback on their workout, allowing for real-time adjustments and improved performance. It is without question the most innovative basketball training machine on the market. It's been the official shooting machine of Coaching You for the last 2 years. To learn more about Dr. Dish, log on to drdishbasketball.com or follow them on Twitter at drdishbball. Really excited to have our guest today, Corey Close, the head coach of UCLA, with us on our Coaching You Basketball podcast. Corey, thanks so much for visiting with us today.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited. I've been a fan of this podcast, and I've benefited in my own coaching, so appreciate you having me on.
Well, I just got off the phone with a dear friend of both of ours, John Gordon, and he said, well, make sure you talk to Corey, and make sure you tell her this. And I said, John, I'm doing damn podcasts with her, okay? I'm not going to, you know, you pick up the phone, you give her a call, but he thinks the world of you, and, you know, and he's been a great help to so many coaches, but to me especially, and I know you're so fond of them and stuff.
Well, yeah, and you know, there's certain people you just know that you'd be different if your paths hadn't crossed. And you know, my path crossed with John Gordon about 6 years ago, and you know, I'm a different coach. He and his entire family, actually,
yeah,
his daughter
fabulous.
Interned with us, and I know I'm different. I'm different because he's my friend, and because I've been influenced by his teachings, and I'm very grateful for that.
Well, you're so influential. You got him to buy a place in L.A. I mean, so that's pretty influential, huh?
Hey, and then I had his wife's 50th birthday party at my house. So
Catherine,
trying to get him really entrenched in the Southern California community.
I want to see the pictures of that one, I'll tell you. But you know, he's got a great family, and
he really does,
and they're so neat. And one of the things of not living in Florida anymore is I don't get to see him on a regular basis, but thank God for the phones.
Absolutely.
But, hey, tell me about I remember I remember the day you got hired at UCLA. Now I'll tell you why, because I'm even though, you know, I'm a guy from Jersey and, you know, I've lived all over the country, I've always been a UCLA fan for years, men's program especially, you know, and you know, and new coach Wooden and everything. And then I all of a sudden, when my friend Nikki Caldwell becomes the coach of LSU, at the time we weren't really friends, but I see she gets the job there, and I said, who are they gonna hire? And then next thing I know, they hire an assistant coach from Florida State. And I said, and I'm living in Orlando, and I said, how the hell can they hire an assistant coach to coach UCLA, one of the great programs in America? But then I find out from my friend John Gordon, this gal is off the charts. And Sue Semra says, one of the best I've ever had. And so were you surprised, even though you had been an assistant there, were you surprised? I mean, that is a big-time job. Were you surprised?
Yes, in one word, yes. Surprised. I have a really good friend, Mark Campbell. He coaches at University of Oregon, and I was recruiting my first summer out as the UCLA head coach, and it was just the two of us watching a summer game. And he says, "Corey, you know, we've been friends a long time. Can I ask you a question?" I said, "Of course, Mark." And he says, "How in the heck did you get that job?" And I just said, "You know, I don't know. God." That's why I said God. It was beyond me. But I think that it's all about the fit and it's all about the right time. I really give credit to Sue Semrau. I wasn't even going to come on the interview. They're not going to hire me. I mean, they're bringing me in because I knew the other four people that were brought in. And I thought, there's no way. And Sue's like, just go and, you know, give yourself a chance. She almost had to push me on the plane.
How about that?
And, you know, and just said, you got to go and do this. And it's interesting. I was the first of five candidates, and I knew by the end of the day, I'm like, this is what I'm supposed to do. I have no basis of thinking I'm going to get this job. I have no reason, but in my gut, I didn't want to go back to Florida State the next day because I sort of knew this is what I was supposed to do. And, I still don't know how or why they hired me, but it's worked out pretty well.
Pretty well, I would say so. Now, you played at Cal Santa Barbara, and, you know, then you coached there and stuff. And it's for all of us that have ever seen the campus there, you know, we say, oh, it was like UCF, you know, and places mm-hmm. like that where they go, that's a diamond in the rough. Oh, that place could be special. And it could be, and it is. Mm-hmm. It has been in different times, you know, both the men's and women's side. But, you know, when you're playing at Cal, Santa Barbara, and then when you're coaching there, are you ever even, you know, I know you started out at UCLA coming mm-hmm. out of school, but do you ever say, like, yeah, I could come back here and be the head coach there? I mean, that's not on the radar, is it, at that point?
No, yeah. No, you're really not. But I'll tell you, being at UC Santa Barbara and then going, okay, that really taught me about player development. That's really where my passion came from player development, because, you know, I wasn't able to recruit at the levels that I'm able to recruit at now at UCLA. And we had to find young women that had good abilities, but were maybe under the radar, that, as you use the phrase, diamonds in the rough, and really provide a really unique kind of experience that they wanted to be a part of. And I think that really did set the foundation for me. And it was also about rebuilding programs. As a player, I went there and they hadn't won a game in 18 tries in the Big West when I got there as a player.
Wow.
And so, and watching Mark French build that program. And then, you know, the last time that we played, the last year I coached there, we had three WNBA players on the roster. And so, you know, it's just being a part of building programs and the foundations and how they went about doing it. And then getting to go to, I really actually had the head coaching opportunity to go to Pepperdine or go be the associate head coach at Florida State. And people thought I was crazy. Like, I would go do that instead. And, oh my gosh, it was the best thing because, you know, as you know, Sue Semrau is absolutely fabulous, but
incredible.
She totally knows how to invest in people. She values the process over product. And as a result, you know, we, as the book Legacy says, better people make better players in the end. And she just really built that program. And I got to watch her do it in a very unique way. And I never would have been ready for this job if I hadn't have had that Florida State experience.
Tell me about, I think men's and women's game, you know, they're both, you know, have up, you know, different things going on in it. The men mm-hmm. have 875 transfers last year. The women's game is now getting more transfers than they ever did before. Okay, give me your reason, in your opinion, why?
Oh, I think it's very complicated. I think it's a combination of too much transactional coaching and not enough transformational coaching and building relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think on the other side of the coin, I think it's we don't value adversity and grinding it out and earning our way. And we want it to happen fast. And if it's not comfortable, and on top of that, there's, you know, 50 voices surrounding these young men and women that are mm-hmm. telling them, oh, you should be playing here more. And the exposure is so great. So the noise in which coaches are trying to combat is also more intense. And I really believe if we would never have been able to build the program here at UCLA the way we have if our parents were not as strong as they are. You know, I actually just told a kid after practice today, three of my four freshmen were in tears today after practice. And it was just one of those days that, like, this is really hard, you know? And I told him, I said, you know, Jordan Canada was in tears. And you know, Jordan Canada said, oh my, I don't know if I can make it. This is so hard. And, you know, she ended up being Pac-12 freshman of the year. And now she's, you know, going to be an All-American and she's going to be a top first round draft pick. But everybody feels that way. But if it wasn't for the parents, and if you don't have a strong circle of influence surrounding those kids saying, no, we're going to persevere. No, we're going to be women of our word. No, we're going to do things that are uncomfortable. And yes, it's not immediately gratifying, but over time. And I think if you don't have that, it really is difficult. And so you've got the noise and you've got immediate gratification on the player side. And then you've got coaches who I think aren't really spending the relational time and really saying, hey, this is about transforming character and providing an educational experience. And as a result, they become great basketball players. When it becomes transactional, and it can be quick fix just as much for the coaches as it can for the players. And I think it creates a perfect storm.
I, you know, of course, I believe in transformational coaching, but a lot of athletic directors don't.
Good point.
You have a very good athletic director there who I know from our UCF DeVos program. And, you know, but I think that's a big problem today is that, you know, we have our, you know, you have, you know, in the past we've had millennials. You're now coaching IY and Generation Z kids, you know, where parents mostly that if things don't go well, like today when those three kids are crying, the parents saying, don't worry, honey, it's not your fault.
It's, right.
Right. You know, but if they are terrific parents, like ours were, they said they kick you in the fanny and say, okay, figure it out. Hang in there, you know. You know, and I think that's one of the things that make coaching now a really hard job at that level. Really hard job.
It really is hard. And I think that, and fine, that's why it really wasn't about for me being here at UCLA, just getting a big name job. It really needed to be the right fit because I am a huge believer. I mean, I was mentored by Coach Wooden for 15 years. I'll never forget, and I've told this story before, but my philosophy has really come out of one conversation, my fourth day on the job here from a guy named John Valley. And he was one of Coach Wooden's players, but I didn't know him. Even though I'd been mentored by Coach Wooden, I had not met him before. And he comes into my office and he says, I've been married 38 years because of what Coach Wooden taught me. I've started three successful businesses because of what Coach Wooden taught me. And then he said, I've conquered cancer three times because of the strength Coach Wooden gave me. And then he really got me. He said, I survived the death of my 12-year-old daughter because of the way Coach Wooden loved me.
Oh my
and
God.
I was just like, my jaw was on the ground. And then he pretty much walked out a few minutes later and I went and looked him up. And then he didn't even mention that he was a starting guard on two of Coach Wooden's national championship teams. And he played 7 years in the NBA.
Blonde hair could shoot the hell out of the ball, right?
Oh yeah, exactly. And blonde guy, Newport Beach. I mean, surfer guy. But he didn't even mention that the championships or the NBA that? Because it paled in comparison to the man he became. And I'm like, that's it right there. I want to create a program, but you can't do that unless you have an administration that also values the character, the process, all of those things along with it. And that's why it was a good match for me here at UCLA, because I knew that that was a value of Dan Guerrero. It wasn't going to be one that was fell on deaf ears.
No, he's terrific. And as I like to say, he gets it in a big, big way. What has been, how did your style play? How has that evolved? I think all of us as coaches, we go through, you know, different phases, but how have you, you know, and I'm sorry, and share also with our listeners, how do you play? And so that they'll get a better understanding of that.
Sure. You know, I think coaching is really about two things in style of play. One is what can you really teach well? And what is an evolving, changing game require of you. And I think it can't be just about what I like to do. You know, and I think that's part of it, because I think if I'm not confident and I don't, I'm passionate about a certain way of playing the game, then that's going to trickle down. But at the same time, I gotta be aware and be willing to adjust to the changing landscape. So for instance, in the women's game, it's a very free flowing, it's a little bit the small ball that we're seeing in the NBA, but a vacated low post, a lot of things in transition, versatile players. You know, you could post up your point guard as much as you're going to post up your five player. You know, it's really about playing the game and being versatile and having movement away from the ball as well as movement with the ball and off of dribble penetration. But I started to look at, okay, what are the trends here? And in the Final Four over the last, you know, 7 or 8 years, you know, at least probably 75% of the teams are with that, playing that kind of style. Then I study the Olympics and I go, okay, you're not going to see the box sets, traditional high, low, you know, that kind of thing. A lot more player to player offense, very little zones, though we have played, you know, probably about 25% zone over the last couple of years, but mostly because of need, not because of want. And so we want to play a very up-tempo style, but every coach says that. I always say, you know, don't take my word for it. Go look at our numbers, our points per possession, you know, our speed of the game. But we do want to play in transition. But we also, I think the number one word for me is versatility. I really want to teach our players how to read screens correctly, how to pass to space and, you know, make players better, how to play according to your personnel. So we try to play we have concepts of Princeton offense in our sets where we really want to spread the floor out, play with a vacant low post, so that we can get high percentage shots, both off the pass, off the bounce, and off the post-ups and by multiple people. So we're obviously hunting for layups, and then we're hunting for wide open threes, and then we'll keep you honest with the mid-range game. So that's what we're trying to do. I think we're still a work in progress. Our points per possession, as well as our, you know, points per game have been, you know, pretty high, have been in the top in our conference and pretty high nationally over the last several years. So we think we're going in the right direction, but I always want to be open. I want to be open to being influenced by our personnel, as well as, you know, all of our players want to play either professionally with USA Basketball or with their national teams. And I think I have to be willing to teach a system that's going to equip them and set them up for success at the next level, not just success with me.
I always say to my friends, my men coach friends, that why is it that men's basketball is the only league in the world, college basketball is the only league in the world that doesn't play four quarters? The women have been so good, so progressive to understand that four quarters is a really a neat way to play the game, but also you deserve yeoman compliments, the women's game, on being able to execute change to advance the ball up, you know, in the last minute of play, to really give the coaches a chance to look like they can coach. I don't care if it's Coach K or Gino. If you got 3 seconds and you got to go to the length of the floor, you're going to look like a dummy, you know, because you're going to throw the ball out of bounds. And they're going to say, well, geez, the guy doesn't have it. But you give that ball that hash mark, and something good can happen, you know. And I think that's, you know, and I always say, geez, you know, copy what the pros are doing, you know, men and women, and they're giving you the answers to the test. But how did you enjoy it last year?
I loved it. Yeah. I think, you know, you hit it on the head in terms of the adventure of it. I think, you know, not only at the being able to advance the ball in the last minute, but, you know, you sort of have a special situation at the end of every quarter.
Yes.
I actually charged one of my assistants, Jenny Huth. I was like, I want to be in the top in the country, you know, top 5% in our underneath out of bounds, our sideline out of bounds, as well as our clock management and special situations. And I charged her to really study it. Who's doing it best? And, you know, Earl Watson, who's, you know, was the head coach of the Phoenix Suns, but he's been back in our practices, and he's been going over film with us and talking about special situations and talking about the things in the NBA that were hardest for him to guard, but also the things he saw being most successful. And we already in our closed scrimmage last Saturday, we already put one in, and I just think it's really fun. So, you know, you're talking about you know, X amount of seconds. How do you get two for ones at the end of every quarter? How do you use those to gain an extra possession every single quarter if you can? And it just adds a sense of adventure and sort of a, you know, it's just one more possession. I mean, we all know the game's about inches. And so, you know, if you get the end of every quarter, you got a chance to take up a couple more inches if you think about it strategically.
I think it's a great way to play. And I think, you know, you guys have now jumped out ahead of the men's game. And as my friend Coach K says, you know, you cannot run a business with a committee, and the men's game can't figure that out. And, you know, and it's so frustrating because it'll take them 5 years to make a change that took you guys like nothing to do. And I love it. I love it because they're so.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, we're really trying to grow our game, and we want people to come and say, hey, the women are, it's an exciting brand of basketball. And I think it really is a matter of exposure. And if you really love the game, and that's why, of course, you know, Coach Wooden's been quoted so many times about, you know, if you really want to see great, you know, the way the game was designed to play, go watch the women, because there's a fluidity of movement. There's a great amount of teamwork. Isn't one person with the ball and everybody else staring with that person with the ball trying to go dunk, which is, I'm not saying it's bad. I love the men's game, but I'm just saying that the women have a real opportunity to showcase fluidity, skill development, understanding of the game and teamwork in a way that I don't think the men's culture allows at this point in time.
No, and I think, you know, it's like whatever you practice. And so AAU men, boys basketball, that's not the way it's played at all.
Correct.
So, you know, I mean, so that when we get them in college, they don't have a clue of how to play. And I think what there was nothing to me more exciting than the women's Final Four last year in Dallas, watching those teams play. And then also, you know, then watching all five games of the WNBA Finals. I thought we saw great, great basketball by two great teams and great coaches. And I think that helps the game so much.
I agree. I mean, I think that, you know, I've already broken down all the pick and roll situations for the all five games with my point guard. It just gave me such an entree of, you know, if you want to be at this level, this is how this level's playing. Elena Beard, you know, came and spoke to our team and talked about what that meant and the culture of that. Yeah, she just did a great job. And her and I have known each other since she was in high school. And so it's been really fun to have her in LA and to connect with her. But she was sharing about, you know, just what that was like. And she said something that was really interesting. And John Gordon would have loved this. But our team said, what you think separates you? And she says, I've completely surrendered the outcomes and I'm completely sold out to the process. And she told the story that she remembers in game five, 2 years ago, she walked out onto the court and she says, I said to myself, I'm surrendering the outcome because I know I've given everything to my process of preparation and to being a great teammate. So I surrendered the outcome. And she goes, and of course, I was elated. We won. And she said, but I did the exact same thing of game five this time. And she goes, we didn't win. And she says, it was disappointing and it stung because I'm a competitor. But the reality is I could still be peaceful because I had still surrendered the outcome and been completely committed to the process of becoming great and the process of being a great teammate, sacrificial teammate. And as a result, I could be peaceful either way. And I thought, oh, what wisdom. And it was just really, really good. I thought our team needed to hear that. But all that to say is you're absolutely correct. I thought not only did they give us a great example of how the game is being played, but I think the women have shown great character, great sportsmanship, great work ethic, great giving back to their communities. I think they really have an ownership of growing our game to the next level and just really appreciated the example both the Final Four teams presented, but also the WNBA teams.
I agree. Fast Model Sports is the world's most versatile basketball coaching software to help power your preparation. Fast Model has developed the industry's best coaching software, including the number one play diagramming and playbook software, FastDraw. FastDraw bridges the gap between whiteboarding and the digital world with an incredibly easy-to-use interface that can be used on both your computer and your iPad, providing maximum portability for your own personal play and drill database. Doesn't stop there. Along with FastDraw, they have other great programs such as FastScout, which I have used, which helps coaches create clean professional scouting reports customized for your team. FastModel is trusted and used by every NBA team and WNBA team, and 85% of Division I college teams and over 8,000 high school and youth teams from over 75 countries around the world. In addition to a great product, they also provide basketball coaching resources through their blog and Playbank, which features over 5,000 free plays and drills for their online coaching community. For access to these plays and more information, visit fastmodelsports.com or follow them on Twitter at fastmodel. Tell me about the Pac-12, really a strong conference. You have some really good teams in that conference.
Really good teams, and boy, really good coaches that challenge me every single day. It's really interesting. It's like any kind of teamwork, right? In any kind of business, that when people get together and go, you know, we can accomplish more together than we can individually or apart. And about 5 years ago, we were the last of the Power Five conferences in women's basketball for consecutive years.
How about that?
And we got together early in our May meetings, and it was, I think, my second year here. So we said, hey, we got to change this. And this is what we have to do to change it. We made a scheduling philosophy change. Everyone agreed to it. We made a commitment to make sure in recruiting that we were, no one was bad mouthing. We were building each other up. We were looking for opportunities to brand our conference together. We were going to really work to keep recruits home. And if it meant, we want to just keep losing, not, we just didn't want to lose them to the East Coast anymore. So right. It was a credit to our conference that we have, like this year, we have 111 live women's basketball games on linear television, which is the most of any conference in the country. So it was a commitment by all fronts, the conference, the coaches, to be people of integrity, to get people to stay, our recruits to stay home, to schedule a certain way with a very scientifically proven philosophy, and to stick to it. And, you know, we've now been the number one RPI conference 2 years in a row, and I expect us to be even better this year.
Wow.
And it's really been an amazing process. It's taught me a lot. You know, it's given me even deeper respect for my colleagues. I mean, we'll want to rip each other's head off in the game, but afterwards, there really is a mutual respect. I had someone tell me at Media Day, it's like night and day. You guys really enjoy each other. You respect each other. You're really different. But it's just a very much a respectful conference that knows that we need each other. In order to stay at the very top, we need each other. And so it's been a real joy to be a part of that process.
You had a real grown-up conversation 5 years ago when you wanted
to. We did.
Yeah. I mean, and mm-hmm. I smile because I'm just thinking of the men coaches in the SEC having that conversation. I just don't.
I mean, honestly, we're sitting out by the pool in Arizona, and the night before we all came in early and to get it done. And I, when I think back and think what everyone had to sacrifice and commit to make that happen,
yeah,
I'm like almost amazed myself that we did it. But it's really been a great teacher, and I'm really excited to the example that hopefully we can set. And I really think our women's game needs to have more of that, because we need to work with each other. Otherwise, we're not gaining, we're losing ground to volleyball, soccer, in terms of the women's side and youth sports. And we're going to lose that space if we don't do a great job of promoting our game together.
You know, women's basketball, I think, is both in WNBA and in the college game, you have a unique thing that we don't have really too much in the other sports, major sports, I should say. We have it in volleyball, swimming, track and field. But, you know, we have some of the best coaches in the country are men, and yet we have some phenomenal women coaches. You know, there's no way, I mean, we don't have any women football coaches in college.
Right.
As head coaches. How, and Gino, is a coaching youth faculty member, OEM, and a dear friend. And he is very, very supportive. I know you've played him of the women coaches, because he just wants the game to grow. And, and he wants the schools to invest in their programs and stuff like that. Now you have some very, very good male coaches in your league. And of course we have Vic Schaefer and, Gary Blair and different guys around the country and stuff besides Gino. But what your feelings of the impact of, good coaches, men, male coaches in a women's game?
Well, I really like the men coaches in our conference, and obviously Kelly Graves done a great job at Oregon, and Scott
Scott.
Ruick, and last year Mike Neighbors at Washington. I mean, the
Love.
list goes on and on.
Yeah.
But I also really want to continue to. I really want women to passionately pursue coaching, and it's a really hard balance. I really don't care if you're a guy or a gal coaching, but we are losing a lot of women. The percentages are actually going down in our game, and so that does concern me.
Yeah.
It's not that the men that there's more men because I want our women to just have a good experience. I want them to be coached well, and I want them to get coached up. But I don't want women to feel like they can't do it all. And I think a lot of women are struggling with the work-life balance and trying to, wanting to be a really good mom, and then also really wanting to be a good career person, and how that all balances out. And
Good point.
it's just it's an interesting dynamic because I don't think it's an either or. It's I think a both and. I think we need to continue to have a profession. That not I think you need I will always have a guy on my staff because I want our women to have really great relationships with men in their lives, to treat them well, and to see Tony Noonan on my staff is so great, with the women in our program, and he's a great teacher. And we had a team building session last weekend, and one of our players is like, Coach Tony, you've just been so influential in my life. I've not had a positive male in my life, and I've needed you. And I'm like, I'm just blown away.
Yeah.
And so I think there's just really great power in that. And at the same time, I really hate to hear stories of like, I just couldn't be in the game anymore. It's just, I couldn't be a good mom and, a good basketball coach. And that breaks my heart because I don't think women should have to choose and men don't have to choose. And, I think that that's something that we need to continue to address and work towards. But, I overall, I want women to have a great experience. I want women to be able to grow in their game. So that overrides, whether you're a male or a female coaching them. But I'm very thankful to people like Gino, who's had our entire staff. I've been to his practices on three different occasions, and he's welcomed us and he's treated us really, really well. I've visited Muffet McGraw, and she's obviously a female who has an incredible supportive husband, and Matt, who's been phenomenal and has had elite success over an extended period of time. I mean, we need elite coaches in our
I
game
agree.
that really continue to mold and mentor future coaches, but also set a great example from lots of different perspectives.
Girl, you are good. You are good. No, I
I'll
mean
pay you
that, no,
later.
I love that. I love that. And it's great perspective. And and I it's so appreciated by me, 'cause I love this game, and I love so many of the coaches, male and female, in it, because I just want people that are gonna love the kids, serve them, and care for them, same as you.
And it's just, they just one of our director of mental training took our team out onto the court and said, what's the thing that's going to last from this experience for the rest of your life? And someone like a ring. And he goes, no, those are going to collect dust. And he goes, well, what about the banner? Oh, they're going to hang in a gym. And they were like sort of stumped. And he says, the only two things that are going to stick with you for the rest of your life from this experience is who you become and who you impact. That's it. Those other things are going to collect dust, and they're going to live in some building somewhere that may or may not be seen. But who you become and who you impact will be felt and impactful for many different people for the whole rest of your life. And I think coaching is such an incredible opportunity, like nothing else. I mean, people say all the time, if you want to influence a culture, influence coaches. I mean, the average Division I basketball player will spend over 3,500 hours in their sport over 4 years, and only 4% of those hours are in games. 4%. But what do we recruit to? The 4% instead of the 96%. And I just want to tell parents and coaches and influencers in these kids' lives, examine the 96%. That's really going to make the difference in their experience and in their life, not the 4%. That's just what you see on TV. That's nothing. And, unfortunately, we buy with our eyes and we buy with the thing that's easiest. And that's just the wins and losses in games.
Sounds like something Joshua Metcalf would say.
You are absolutely correct.
He's
So
spectacular. Love him. Love him.
he was the one who said it. So
yeah,
he does a great job with
incredible.
us. In fact, I showed a clip to the team today from the Iowa State football team, where he was addressing the team afterwards when they beat those top five opponents this last month. And their theme book all summer long was Chop Wood, Carry Water by Joshua Metcalf. And he was pretty much quoting the book in his speech. And I shared it with the team today because I was like, you know, that's what we have to stay committed to. And you don't know, you have to stay, fall in love with the process of becoming great. And you don't know when that process is going to love you back. You got to just be committed to that. And I thought he did a great job of sharing that with his team after the game. And that's Joshua Metcalf's influence. So I give him a lot of credit.
No, he's a star. He's in, you know, John introduced me to him. He's, we've done two or three podcasts. We love Joshua. Last thing I want to talk to you about is my dear friend, miss him terribly, is, and I just talked to Dale Brown earlier today, his 82nd birthday, and, you know, he loved John Wooden so much, and Don Yeager loves him, you know, and John Maxwell loves him. I mean, it's all these guys, and I said,
yeah, everybody loves him.
But when I was a young college coach, God, I'm scared to tell you, but I want to tell you, I was 22, 23. And I'm at up in Boston. At back then, we had these clinics called Medalist Clinics. They made uniforms, and we're at the Marriott Hotel in the outskirts of Boston. And Coach Wooden is giving a clinic. He's one of the speakers on Friday night. It's now Saturday morning, and it's like 7 a.m. The clinic starts at 9. Think about this nowadays. He is sitting in the lobby on a couch by himself. By himself. Not one person. There's 780 coaches, not like today's clinics. 780 coaches are at a clinic. And no one talks to him. I walk by him, and, you know, I walk up and I shook his hand. And he says, "Son, what's your name?" And I said, "Brendan, sir." And he says, "I love that name. I love that name. Sit down and talk to me." I mean, That's all I got to tell you about Coach Wooden, right? He was so caring. So, I mean, you know, nowadays, if you tried to talk to someone, you know, they would, first of all, you couldn't get near them. And secondly, they wouldn't give you the time of day, unfortunately, a lot of people. But we're talking a lot of years later. It's still like it was yesterday. Tell me about your 15 years with Coach and the influence and how kind and generous he is with his thoughts, his ideas, his time, you know, and what an influence.
Yeah, well, you don't have enough time in your podcast for me to go on.
I own it. So I own it. So we got all year. This might be the longest podcast in history, you know. So
I'll try not to go on too long.
Don't worry about
it. The funniest thing about it is that you have your name is what got you in with him. Well, my name is what got me in with him. I remember I was also 22 years old and I was going there. It was 1993 and Steve Lavin said we were both restricted earnings coaches here at UCLA. And he said, "We're going tonight." It was a Tuesday night. And I was like, "Oh, I'm not dressed. I'm in sweats, you know." And he's like, "I don't care. You're coming." So I went with him and a couple of other high school coaches, and we went up to his little apartment, and I was sweating profusely. I was shaking, and I would get out of the elevator, and he meets us in the hallway, and he says, "Who are you?" And I was like shaking, and Corey became like 10 syllables. I was like, "Corey?" And he goes, "How do you spell that?" And I said, "C-O-R-I." And he goes, "Oh, come right in. I want to show you something." And he comes around the corner and he shows me this little stool and it said C-O-R-I. And he goes, "You're the first person I've ever met that spells it like my great granddaughter, Corey."
Wow.
And sort of the rest is history. He said, "Come right in." I mean, if my parents had said C-O-R-E-Y, I would have been like screwed, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, from that time on, I just kept going back every other Tuesday when I was here as a restricted earnings. And then about once a month when I was at UC Santa Barbara and continued, even when I was at Florida State, I remember I brought out Lance White, who was an assistant coach with me, and John Lilly, who was the recruiting coordinator at the time for football and wide receivers coach. And we had a great relationship with the football staff. And they go, is there any way you could, you know, go out there and help us meet Coach Wooden? I said, "Okay, I will, but you guys need to write down questions, you know." And Lance, I mean, great talker, great recruiter, great teacher of the game. And then, you know, John Lilly, I mean, he's a recruiter for the top one, you know, top five football programs in the country. And they're like, "Oh, Corey, we'll be fine. I'm like, guys, I've taken a lot of people there," and they freeze when they get in there. And they like thought I'm crazy. And so sure enough, we get out there, and in the morning, I must have carried a conversation for 4 hours because those guys were tongue tied. I mean, because Coach Wooden would pull out one of his poems and he'd read from it, and it was just astounding. And so you were just dumbfounded, so you couldn't think about it, a question. And then, you know, I would say, well, tell him about this story, and, you know, tell him about that interaction with, you know, Bibby, or, you know, Mike Warren, or, you know, Bill Walton, or, you know, the storytelling that he has. And those guys did not say a word till lunch. And finally, we took him out to lunch. He let us take him out to lunch, and finally they loosened up. But I was like, you know, he just was awe-inspiring, and his wisdom was so profound. And I think so much in life we make more complicated than it needed to be, and he had a way of making complicated things really simple and principled centered. And he just influenced me over and over again. Last week at our practice facility grand opening, I had a chance to speak about his influence on my life, but also on Annie Myers, who also called him Papa, and Nan Wooden, his daughter, was there. And, you know, I asked him, you know, Coach, when I first got here, I said, Coach, or not right before I got here, I was at Florida State at the time, and he passed, unfortunately, 1 year before I got this job. But he, I asked him when I was at Florida State, Coach, if I'm thinking about building a program, I mean, tell me about some of the things that you talked about. And it's interesting. I still remember I'd written it down in my journal, and I just brought it out last week when he talked about it needs to be good for the past, in how it connects to your alumni and how it connects people back to the experience. It has to be good for the present, and that you are investing in pouring into the young women under your supervision so that it pays off long after they leave your program and long after their jump shot goes flat. And then it needs to be for the future, and recruiting needs to be built in such a way that recruits look at your program and say, I don't want to miss out on that. And it was sort of all encompassing. And I talked about how our new practice facility is, I use that. And it's how we want to connect alumni to the experience. We want to pour in sincerely from the inside out. We have a saying at UCLA, champions are made here, because we have the most national championships. But we say in our program, champions are made here from the inside out, with our character growth and with pouring into people. And, you know, and then lastly, we want to have an experience, a transformational, an uncommon transformational experience that recruits and their parents say, I don't want my daughter to miss out on that. And it all comes from Coach Wooden. It all comes from me having lunch with Keith Erickson and still having him talk about the man he is because of Coach Wooden's influence. It's, you know, hearing Earl Watson talk to our team last week about even when he was a player here and how Coach Wooden influenced the kind of person he became, the kind of player he became, the kind of coach he became, the kind of dad he is. I mean, it's just, it just goes on and on and on. And so I think that it's just this great reminder that, you know, Coach Wooden really didn't value his championships. He really did see them as a byproduct of building character in young men. And, you know, and having an influence on us, he just thought basketball was the way in which he was called to teach about excellence. And he was called to love people that were different than him. And I'll never forget, we tried to, you know, and I've heard this story a million times about how he started every season teaching his men how to put their shoes and socks on a particular way. And, you know, I sort of thought it was a cute story. And, you know, I didn't really understand the depth other than, well, they had Converses and, you know, Chuck Taylors and, you know, bad socks. And so no wonder they needed to do that.
Right.
But, you know, my second year here, Rayford Johnson came in, and he started our season on October 1 or whenever it was that year, that how to teach put their shoes and socks on, just like Coach Wooden taught him. And I mean, this guy, you know, Rayford Johnson is a world record holder, lit the torch in the 84 Olympics, but he also won national championship playing basketball with Coach Wooden too.
I didn't know that. Wow.
It's pretty amazing. Well, he comes in and he does this, and I'm thinking, oh, good, I'm keeping Coach Wooden's legacy alive, and I'm patting myself on the back, really. But I really don't understand the depth of the story. And he starts in a meticulously soft-spoken, gentle way that, just like Coach Wooden taught him, he talks about how you have to have firm laces, and everyone's got to put their socks on this way, and everyone's got to tie their shoes this way, and it has to be done and started the same direction and ending the same direction every day at the same exact exact detail that you did the day before. And then at the end, he looked up and he looked at the eyes of all of our players and he said something that really hit me. And I'm like, oh, like anything else, everyone thinks it's about one thing, but it's really about something else. He says, you know, I was a world renowned track athlete, but I was a very insecure basketball player. And I'm in here with all these great recruits. And I was like, how am I going to fit in here? And then I'm thinking, man, this guy's, Jewish, and this guy's black, and this guy's white, and this guy's from Philadelphia, and this guy's from New York, and we're so different. He goes, but it didn't matter if I was a track athlete playing basketball. It didn't matter if I was from the outskirts of Fresno and someone else was an All-American from New York. We actually were ready to become a team when we learned how to put our shoes and socks on the exact same way. And I was like, wow. Oh, it wasn't just about avoiding blisters. It was about, you know what? It doesn't matter where you come from. It doesn't matter about your socioeconomics. It doesn't matter about if you feel insecure, if you're the engine of the team or you're a role player on the team. We're all a part of the team and we all start by putting our shoes and socks on the same way. And, you know, it's just, you know, we get to, at UCLA, we get to hear these stories and be influenced by these people over and over again. And so I'm reminded not only by my own mentorship of Coach Wooden here at UCLA, but I'm also reminded because I get to be around those alumni constantly that remind me that the influence is about their hearts. It's about their lives. It's about loving them unconditionally, valuing diversity, including people and building bridges with people that see the lens of life differently. And I just thought Coach Wooden was the ultimate example of that. And I'm so grateful to continually be influenced by him every day.
That is phenomenal because he's one of my favorites. And I've never heard stuff put that way. And Corey, you've been unbelievable. I really appreciate the time. You have helped so many women coaches, but more importantly, you've helped a lot of men coaches today because the things you talk about in coaching are what coaching is all about. And I thank you for that. And I think we all need to be reminded of that. And that's why you're very, very special. And I can't wait to come to Los Angeles this year. When I do, I'm going to make sure I come to practice. And
please do.
I can't wait. I want to see that fabulous new practice facility. Mm-hmm. I've always loved to go to Pauley Pavilion, and I hope I do it when you guys are playing and stuff. But I appreciate it. I can't wait to tell John Gordon. He'll be so jealous that I talked to you today. And you're special. I hope you have a great season. And if we can ever do anything for you coaching you, please, Corey, please call upon us.
Well, thank you. And, you know, the other thing that Coach Wooden taught me is that always remember that we're all doing the same thing, whether you're a junior high coach, whether you're, whether you're a college basketball coach, an MBA, whether you're doing a podcast, whether you're writing a book. I mean, Don Yeager used to talk to me about this as well. We're all doing the exact same thing. So thank you for what you're doing. We're all pouring into people. We're all trying to impact people through this great game. And I consider it a complete honor to have been a part of it today. So thank you for including me.
Corey, have a great season, okay?
Oh, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks so much. Have a good one.
I promised you that Corey was going to be fabulous. I'm so excited that we were able to get her, you know, just before as she's starting her season. And a terrific coach, great wisdom. I learned a bunch. And that's, you know, one of the things that I love when in doing these selfishly, I love to learn. And when you get around people like Corey Close, you know, I don't care. She is a star. An absolute star. Appreciate again our great sponsors at Fast Model and at Dr. Dish, who love the game and are helping grow this game so much. Until next time, this is the coach, Brendan Sir.